This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
For Wall Street, it's a paradise, but for Main Street, it's hell.
We speak with the Reverend Jesse Jackson about the jobless recovery and continuing foreclosure crisis amidst what some claim is an economic recovery.
We'll talk with Reverend Jackson about his call for the bailed out banks to reinvest in America and for establishing a national infrastructure bank to put people back to work.
And targeted stimulus, a call for equity and parity, and the strategies to direct investment in job creation, minority businesses, and underserved communities. According to Reverend Jackson, we have to get the stimulus down to the people.
Now, a conversation with the Reverend Jesse Jackson on rebuilding our street.
Reverend Jackson, I can hear some of the train sounds in the background as I know you're traveling.
Coming down the railroad track.
There's so many issues to really comment on, but perhaps with the 85,000 jobs that were just shed as the last unemployment figures came down. So what isn't happening with government?
Two things. One is Wall Street is reveling in prosperity, trying to figure out how to spend its bonuses. And so as Wall Street is rising, you see a rising tide lifts all both Wall Street and Harlem on the same island. So Wall Street is rising, Harlem is not. That's one way to look at it. Second is that with the stocks going up and unemployment going up, there's a detachment between the banks we bail out and any plan to reinvest in America. We have bailed out the banks. We have not restructured them. Unless we restructure them, we'll never get the linkage to reinvest in and reconstruction. We should be restructuring loans, not repossessing homes and churches and student loans driven into default.
I'd like you to elaborate on that, because the conversation seems to be the anger is directed toward the bonuses that Wall Street executives get. But you're talking about something deeper, and that has to do with restructuring the loans and restructuring Wall Street.
These are subsidized bonuses, government subsidized bonuses. We trusted the banks, and we allowed the banks to operate outside of civil rights and consumer protection laws. They were able to operate outside of fair lending laws, fair housing laws, Community Reinvestment Act. They got stimulus money, didn't have to honor EEOC, or contract compliance, or affirmative action, or consumer protection. We allowed them to operate outside of Title VI. We said to Bob Jones University some years ago, school in South Carolina, you can't get government money unless you're on the government laws of inclusion. We did not hold banks to the same standard. So we watered the leaves, and we have left the roots very dry.
Reverend Jackson, are we really enmeshed in a jobless recovery, as some are beginning to refer to it? Is there any real consideration in the stimulus package or in any other thing? It really does seem to have left the broad populace behind in terms of real jobs.
As long as they're academic, I mean, a jobless recovery is like an omelet. It's a contradiction in terms. What Roosevelt had to do was, one, he had to bring the Glass-Steagall Act, break up this ownership where banks own, you know, the financial services as well, because the bank's interest really is in trading and globalization, not in workers, nor forgiving loans, I mean, forgiving restructured housing loans. A report came out last week, the five major banks that got stimulus money, the 3.3 million homes eligible for modification, they might have fined 30,000. Bank of America was 1.2 million were eligible. They might have fined 98. Obviously, they have no interest in home modification and restructuring bottom up. While the homeowners are facing eviction and sinking underwater, they're making these huge, almost vulgar profits on Wall Street subsidized by the government. So at this point, the government is on the side of Wall Street, not the side of the people.
You called for a national infrastructure bank. What would that entail?
Well, as opposed to having two or three banks too big to fail and too big to honor the law, they would have targeted reconstruction banks, urban bank, rural, maybe even an education bank manageable enough to make sense and to target where people's needs are. The national unemployment rate's around 10%. Urban ghettos is between 18% and 30%. And for youth, around 50%. there is no plan to address that. Now, what Roosevelt had to do, which I was impressed with, one, targeted the emergency room, the CCC jobs, number one. Two, he declared a moratorium on foreclosures, number two. Number three, he restructured the banks, brought in SEC and FDIC, and brought in protection for consumers. We need that kind of restructuring bottom-up, not just fortification top-down. You trust individuals. You structure institutions. So far, there has been no structural adjustment to these mammoth institutions.
Would these be government banks you're talking about or highly regulated private banks?
It could be highly regulated private banks. Or the banks right now are part government, part private. But the purpose must be to restructure our economy bottom-up. We're also going to ask for homeowner counseling and loan modification. We then want to start doing mass negotiations and mass action as opposed to going one by one. We need to have mass negotiations. I'm just struck with the fact that these major banks with 3.2 million eligible for modification modified 30,000. That is like real contempt. And at this point, there is no plan to offset that kind of banker behavior.
Certainly we understand why the general population should be so angered. But what do you say in response to the enormity of the bonuses and the salaries that are still being proposed on top of the stimulus money that was given to Wall Street and the banks?
Well, they were given stimulus money and credits to back it up. And we are the most, in the past 9 months, the most massive shift of wealth from the poor to the wealth in the history of the nation, not the world, is truly reverse Robin Hood. We trusted those banks. They gave a two-page proposal to get these billions of dollars, the trillions in backup, and yet we have not had a targeted plan for the most vulnerable Americans. To my knowledge, no community development plan, no plan that would deal with targeted jobs for that we could have. You know, the banks would not have put forth the Tennessee Valley Authority to bring rural electrification. That was a big government incentive project. The banks would not have built a CCC camp to put workers back to work. The banks would not have declared a moratorium on foreclosures, which Roosevelt had. We need a restructuring of the economy. We need reconstruction of banks. That means a mentality of bottom-up, and you trust the people and their needs, not just top-down.
How do you analyze President Obama's failure to implement the kind of program that you're talking about right now?
Well, he trusted Geithner, he trusted Larry Summers, he trusted the Wall Streeters, people he knew from Harvard, had confidence in, and I suppose they sold him on, if you stabilize these banks, they'll do the right thing. Well, he stabilized them and made them richer, and they have not done the right thing. Matter of fact, he called a meeting weeks ago, and three of them wouldn't even show up. They was too busy counting their money. They said they couldn't get to Washington because of bad weather. You can take on a seller from New York to Washington for 2 hours and 50 minutes in a day, in the week. And so, to me, that was an act of contempt. But even if they had come, those who did come, did not come with some plan to restructure loans, possess churches and homes and student loans. I find it despicable that the banks are getting 0% interest money, charging students 6 to 8% for student loans. They're making a fee of a free money. Many schools are not hurting. Students in school got to come out. Those out can't get in because of the cost of the fees, cost of interest and rising tuition. While these banks render prosperity that is in fact government subsidized, they're basically 0% interest money. Students should get 0% interest money and more scholarships and less loans. That is the key to our future and development.
You know, I was always amazed as to why there hasn't been any relevant discussion about building rental housing. Certainly, while it's critical to look at the issue of foreclosures and people losing their homes, the idea of jobs, I mean, we're talking about green windows when we don't have any homes to put them in, when we don't have any housing to house.
Absolutely.
Not just talking about affordable, but talking about low-income housing. Why is that not a hue and cry for both the creation of jobs and the housing of the populace, which is growing in numbers of the homeless who have both lost their jobs and are being pushed out, et cetera?
Your point is so well taken. We need a big idea. Roosevelt's New Deal was a big idea. Moratorium on foreclosures, job for the jobless, restructure banks, invest in industrial development, a big idea. Even Johnson's Great Society, if you will, housing and urban development, that basic dream of rebuilding bottom-up has been dished to the side. And now is the time for activists to begin, I'm convinced, to take their case back to the streets. When you go to the streets, mass marches, mass arouses of public consciousness, mass action brings about mass change. And the kind of change that we exhibited in the elections last year was that exhibit in the fulfillment of our election. Right now, it's midday in our politics, and many ways, it's midnight in our economy. Those who are in that midnight cannot be silent. Our speaking out and our acting out our fears and our hopes really does matter.
Reverend Jackson, I couldn't help but think about and recall, as you were speaking, an anniversary of the birth date of the Reverend Martin Luther King. And, of course, just shortly before we lost him, one of the things that was certainly on people's minds was the Poor People's March. Is there some sense that we really do need a mass get together of poor people pouring out into the nation's capital to make their voices heard loud and strong about bailing out their street and not continuously Wall Street?
The capital of streets where they live, not just Manchester, Marshall, Washington. Dr. King looked up and we went to that meeting and said, with Wall Street going through the roof and the money shifting from the war on poverty to the war on Vietnam, what's left out of this equation is poor people. And so now here we are, we're investing more in Afghanistan, investing more in Wall Street bankers, investing more in a public health care plan that may not have a public option. Somewhere it must be a plan not just for the hope of some green job, but some real investment in of putting people back to work. And you know, with 2.3 million Americans in prison, about 700,000 come out a year. These are mostly young people who are unskilled or who are skilled and can't find a job because of their records. We must make room for them as well.
We had that kind of movement in the 60s. It even extended into the 70s. But we haven't seen anything like that since. And we have the conditions now for the misery right now that is pervasive throughout this country. What will it take for some of the major institutions, the labor unions, the NAACP, to organize people into that kind of movement?
Mark Morey on the Urban League and I are going to put together a jobs tour around the country, arousing people town by town. Let's fight back for jobs. You can't just have the march on Washington. You must have march in many places where Congress people who vote will feel the effect of the march in their town. But just from Washington, it's barely noticeable back home. You need to build a bottom-up Put America Back to Work movement, not just top-down. Well, you know, we have this conference in New York. In part, we are mobilizing all the business people who want loans and churches facing foreclosure, but labor fighting for the right to organize. I am concerned that you cannot have a job discussion without having a trade discussion. We're not losing manufacturing jobs to lack of infrastructure. We're losing manufacturing jobs to imbalance of trade. We need both imbalance of trade as well as infrastructure development. We simply cannot limp along in the future with these huge imbalances to China without some capacity to revive a need for manufacturing. I do not give up on the dream of America's manufacturing.
Reverend Jackson, one of the things that you've called for also is providing guarantees for pension funds as we see so much of that slipping away. Indeed, in some of the industries that really revolutionized around pensions, the mining industry, the auto industry, et cetera. So what would you propose to really assure that pension funds are protected?
Well, those who misspend them must first be penalized in the court of law. And the people that rape the economy got bailed out. And except for Madoff, which is an extreme, no one else has moved, except for moving on the GM chairman, Wagner. I mean, nothing else has moved. That's why I say we have refortified that which was and not restructured. We cannot keep putting this new wine in these old wineskins. We need the restructure. And You know, when the Clinton forces allowed Glass-Steagall, after 75 years, when Glass-Steagall got removed, it opened up the floodgates of banker greed. And the banks used their power to not allow the senators, to not allow senators to allow judges to modify laws. They used their power to either buy up congresspeople or let them be a source of fundraising. And once the Congress can no longer play the role of the honest arbiter or referee, my God, fair housing laws, fair lending laws, community reinvestment, all these consumer protection, all these basic civil rights laws were cast aside. We need these civil rights laws enforced, funded, and refortified.
In addition to the critique of the banksters, as FDR used to call them, there also is the need for a stimulus package, a renewed stimulus package that didn't do the job last time. Obama is only proposing one of about $150 billion. Do you think that's adequate?
Absolutely not. The package must correspond to what the real needs are in Toledo, in Detroit, in Chicago. Those areas need a huge stimulus part. Stimulus part one was prejudice toward bankers with some assumptions about what they would do if they got bailed out. Well, they never promised it would change. They just promised they wanted relief, and they got relief. And then some of the key players in New York moved down to Washington. So they kind of repositioned their friends, it seems to me. I say we need now a massive stimulus plan. For the American work is the right thing to do. It's also productive. You know, we're fighting for a health care bill. Well, people who are unemployed and who are facing home foreclosure, a heightened rent without jobs, and student loan defaults and credit card scams, they cannot meaningfully participate in the health care plan. The health care plan, student loan defaults, credit card scams, jobs, and houses are on the same line in the same bracket. The present level of job hemorrhaging will even bankrupt the new health system, as proposed.
Reverend Jackson, there's a number of elements, of course, in the Senate bill that go the gamut from restrictions on public funding of abortions to no provision for immigrants receiving health care to a tax or tax on so-called Cadillac plans. Do you have any belief that it means much if indeed whatever the reconciliation of the House and the Senate are, if this proposal that has been put forth by Obama, particularly without any public option, goes forth, is it worth it?
I tell people in the public option, FedEx and UPS deliver the mail. If you didn't have the post office, you would not have the check on them to make the cost reasonable. Now, without the public option, what do we see? The idea about having it, the insurance stock is going up, hospital stock is going up, the pharmaceutical stock is going up, bank stock is going up, and because they speculate, if their lobbyists prevail, then they will profit immensely, but at great public expense.
Reverend Jackson, the right is out on the street with their tea parties. Should those of us of liberal and left persuasion be also going out on the street to demand more change?
Well, we should be on the streets demanding change, but not the Tea Party people as our enemies. They are people driven in the main by anxiety and fear. We must relieve them of their fears. They, too, need jobs. They, too, need home loan modification. They, too, need student debt relief so they can come out of school with a job and be able to be productive. So if we address their real needs and help relieve their fears, they ultimately are our allies. They, too, sing America.
Reverend Jackson, since Ken raised the issue of the Tea Party, which, of course, as I think about people's fears, usually their fears turn in the direction of immigrants. They turn in the direction of African Americans and, of course, are then so easily maneuvered and manipulated around. As the media keeps trying to tell us that we're in a kind of post-racial period with the enormous success and importance of the election of an African-American president, as we've passed the year mark now almost, what do you assess? Where are we at as a country in terms of racial disparities? And I would like to...
You know, Jackie Robinson broke into baseball in 1947. It was a breakthrough. It didn't change the infrastructure of baseball. It didn't change ownership. It didn't change who owned the stadia. It was a guy who did well and a very deserving guy. It did not change baseball's infrastructure. It's President Barack Obama. And it's a great thing for America. It has not changed the infrastructure. So today, unemployment, maybe 10% nationally, the number they keep using on TV, the blacks are 20 to 30%. We're number one in football, basketball, baseball, and all that, but number one in infant mortality. Number one in short life expectancy. In Chicago, 3,200 blacks die a year from insurance from disparities. That is a 9/11 every year in one city. These disparities, 2.3 million Americans in jail, 1.1 million in African Americans, the most jail population on earth. So these gaps are not going to change unless there's an investment to change their life options around. And clearly, it's very clear that rising tides will not lift those boats unless those boats are somehow unleashed from the bottom, because right now they are kind of bolted to the floor.
Your Wall Street summit, can you talk to us about that summit and what you hope to accomplish?
For one, we hope to organize ministers around the nation to meet with banks to renegotiate relationships. The banks that got the money must be accountable. The stimulus money must get down to the people. Talking about ways to reduce the interest rate for homeowners so people can renegotiate their deals. When I have Perez, the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, if we enforce Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, and it really begins to enforce the laws of EEOC and contract compliance, affirmative action, consumer protection laws, will help and cover an awful lot of people. There'll be many youth who are fighting to get a student loan rate that allow them to stay in school. So 3 days of vigorous activity, labor, basically labor breakfast, as we fight for workers' rights to organize and to reinvest, to reaffect the trade policy of our country, which I think is damning at this point. The ministers in the marketplace, churches fighting to maintain their roles as servants in the community, but who wants to stop the pattern there of church foreclosures. 3 vigorous days of activity.
I'm interested in how you look at the statement of Harry Reid, which would seem to go in the direction that the white electorate would have been hypersensitive and very circumspect about electing somebody of more prominent African-American speech patterns or heritage or look or verbiage, etc. What's your sense?
Well, what Harry Reid said was wrong, but does not comply with Crenshaw wishing upon us the segregationists. Strom Thurmond is prevailing in 1948. The two different issues and a false comparison. What Harry Reid did say, however, was offensive, it was divisive, and deeply cultural. No one has the right, by some false standard, to choose leadership of other people. And I hope he would only express his regrets for making saying it, but I think that beyond statement, which he made and apologized for, that was in this past Saturday's paper in New York. He was requesting that Bloomberg not support Harold Ford to be in support for the U.S. Senate. Back in Illinois last year, the 3 African-American names, Emil Jones, Senate President, Congressman Danny Davis, and Jesse Jackson Jr. were not on his list. Tammy Duckworth and Lisa Magnus on his list. Well, following those 2 lists in Illinois or in New York, there would be fewer African-Americans in the Senate. And so I would hope that he would have a sensitivity for inclusiveness, and that I've known him to be a fairly decent guy across the years, but he ought to be more sensitive.
This sounds to me, again, I can't help but hearken back to Dr. Martin Luther King when I think about, of course, in his last days with the sanitation workers who were marching with the slogan, "I am a man." And part of what it seemed he was melding in the end of his life was the issue of civil rights with human rights, with economic rights as the right to push for in the 20th century at that time. Is economic rights, should this be the slogan and the mantra for the 21st century, or is it kind of you can't buy a hamburger if you haven't got a dime?
It's clear that the right to health care, the right to health to a job, the right to education must be seen as fundamental rights, not just privileges. And to make that society means an investment in the bottom of our society in ways that we've not done in many a year. That's why I keep saying Roosevelt, the New Deal was a comprehensive big idea. Because it was a depression. Well, in many segments of America today, it is a depression. And it's been for some time. If 10% plus is depression, we've had that in urban America for quite a while now. And I tell you that education costs less than jails. Investing in our youth in formative years is more valuable than reacting to them and locking them up on the backside.
Someone wonders how far, indeed, we've come. And with that, I was just hoping you would give us some summary of that.
How far we have come. You know, August 28, 1955, Emmett Till was lynched. And there was an acceptance of his being lynched. That's why there was no real pursuit of those who killed him. Before they walked free. August 28, 1963, Dr. King led the march in Washington, dreaming of us honoring the broken promise. August 28, 2008, Barack Obama becoming the nominee of the Democratic Party. That is a way of measuring progress. You look on the sidelines of athletic teams and see black and white players playing together and black and white coaches. Now look at the University of Alabama that took an army to take students into the door over the governor's objection. And University of Texas, where a lawsuit was required to get blacks in that school. To see those teams and pastors and native plans for the great pastime football game, those expressions of change, and they're good expressions. But now, of course, we need to deal with more fundamental change, that is of evening the playing field for the American worker and putting America back to work. And that involves tough trade negotiations. It involves investing in education. For many years, education was a scholarship, now it's a loan. Education was an investment, now it's a commodity. Those fundamental shifts must take place. That's change that we can feel.
Reverend Jackson, thank you for being so gracious with your time. Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.